2. Damaya, in Winter's Past. The straw is so warm that Damaya doesn't want to come out of it. Like a blanket, she thinks through the bleariness of half-sleep, like the quilt her great-grandmother once sewed for her out of patches of uniform cloth. Years ago, and before she died, Medir worked for the Brevard Militia as a seamstress and got to keep the scraps from any repairs that required new cloth. The blanket she made for Damaya was mottled and dark, navy and taupe and gray and green in rippling bands like columns of marching men. But it came from Medir's hands, so Damaya never cared that it was ugly. It always smelled sweet and gray and a bit fusty. So it is easy now to imagine that the straw, which smells mildewy and like old manure, yet with a hint of fungal fruitiness, is Ma's blanket. The actual blanket is back in Damaya's room, on the bed where she left it. The bed in which she will never sleep again. She can hear voices outside the straw pile now. Mama and someone else talking as they draw closer. There is a rattle creak as the barn door is unlocked, and then they come inside. Another rattle as the door shuts behind them. Then Mother raises her voice and calls, "Dama, Dama!" Damaya curls up tighter, clenching her teeth. She hates that stupid nickname. She hates the way Mother says it all, light and sweet, like it's actually a term of endearment and not a lie. When Dama Dama doesn't respond, Mother says, "She can't have gotten out. My husband checked all the barn locks himself." "Alas, her kind cannot be held with locks." This voice belongs to a man. Not her father or older brother or the calm headman or anyone she recognizes. This man's voice is deep, and he speaks with an accent like none she's ever heard. Sharp and heavy, with long drawled O's and A's and crisp beginnings and ends to every word. Smart sounding. He jingles faintly as he walks, so much so that she wonders whether he's wearing a big set of keys, or perhaps he has a lot of money in his pockets. She's heard that people use metal money in some parts of the world. The thought of keys and money makes Damaya curl in on herself. Because, of course, she's also heard the other children in the creche whisper of child markets in faraway cities of beveled stone. Not all places in the world are as civilized as the nomad lats. She laughed off the whispers then. But everything is different now. "Here," says the man's voice, not far off now. "Fresh spoor, I think." Mother makes a sound of disgust, and Damaya burns in shame as she realizes they've seen the corner she uses for a bathroom. It smells terrible there, even though she's been throwing straw down as a cover each time. "Squatting on the ground like an animal, I raised her better." "Is there a toilet in here?" asks the child buyer in a tone of polite curiosity. "Did you give her a bucket?" Silence from Mother, which stretches on. And belatedly, Damaya realizes the man has reprimanded Mother with those quiet questions. It isn't the sort of reprimand Damaya is used to. The man hasn't raised his voice or called anyone names. Yet Mother stands still and shocked, as surely as if he'd followed the words with a smack to the head. A giggle bubbles up in her throat, and at once she crams her fist into her mouth to stop it from spilling out. They'll hear Damaya laugh at her mother's embarrassment, and then the child buyer will know what a terrible child she really is. Is that such a bad thing? Maybe her parents will get less for her. That alone almost makes the giggle break free, because Damaya hates her parents, she hates them. And anything that will make them suffer makes her feel better. Then she bites down on her hand, hard, and hates herself because, of course, Mother and Father are selling Damaya if she can think such thoughts. Footsteps nearby.
"Cold in here," says the man.
We would have kept her in the house if it was cold enough to freeze, says Mother. And Amaya almost giggles again at her sullen, defensive tone. But the child buyer ignores Mother. His footsteps come closer and they're strange. Demaya can sess footsteps. Most people can't. They sess big things, shakes and whatnot, but not anything so delicate as a footfall. She has known this about herself all her life, but only recently realized it as a warning. It's harder to perceive when she's out of direct contact with the ground, everything conveyed through the wood of the barn's frame and the metal of the nails holding it together. But still, even from a story up, she knows what to expect. Beat, beat, the step, and then its reverberation into the depths. Beat, 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 beat. The child buyer's steps, though, go nowhere and do not echo. She can only hear them, not sess them. That's never happened before. And now he's coming up the ladder to the loft where she huddles under the straw. Ah, he says, reaching the top. It's warmer up here. Dama, Dama, Mother sounds furious now. Get down here. Demaya scrunches herself up tighter under the straw and says nothing. The child buyer's footsteps pace closer. You needn't be afraid, he says in that rolling voice. Closer. She feels the reverberation of his voice. Through the wood and down to the ground and into the rock and back again. Closer. I've come to help you, Demaya Strongback. Another thing she hates, her use name. She doesn't have a strong back at all, and neither does Mother. All Strongback means is that her female ancestors were lucky enough to join a calm, but were too undistinguished to earn a more secure place within it. Strongbacks get dumped same as calmless when times get hard, her brother Chaga told her once to tease her. Then he'd laughed like it was funny, like it wasn't true. Of course, Chaga is a resistant, like father. All calms like to have them around no matter how hard the times, in case of sickness and famine and such. The man's footsteps stop, just beyond the straw pile. You needn't be afraid, he says again, more softly now. Mother is still down on the ground level and probably can't hear him. I won't let your mother hurt you. Demaya inhales. She's not stupid. The man is a child buyer, and child buyers do terrible things. But because he has said these words, and because some part of Demaya is tired of being afraid and angry, she uncurls. She pushes her way through the soft, warm pile and sits up, peering out at the man through coils of hair and dirty straw. He is as strange-looking as he sounds, and not from anywhere near Palela. His skin is almost white. He's so paper pale. He must smoke and curl up in strong sunlight. He has long, flat hair, which together with the skin might mark him as an Arctic, though the color of it, a deep, heavy black like the soil near an old blow, doesn't fit. Eastern coasters' hair is black like that, except fluffy and not flat. But people from the east have black skin to match. And he's big, taller and with broader shoulders than father. But where father's big shoulders join a big chest and a big belly, this man sort of tapers. Everything about the stranger seems lean and attenuated. Nothing about him makes racial sense. But what strikes Demaya most are the child buyer's eyes. They're white, or nearly so. She can see the whites of his eyes, and then a silvery gray disc of color that she can barely distinguish from the white, even up close. The pupils of his eyes are wide in the barn's dimness, and startling amid the desert of colorlessness. She's heard of eyes like these, which are called ice white in stories and stone lore. They're rare, and always an ill omen. But then, The child buyer smiles at Demaya, and she doesn't even think twice before she smiles back. She trusts him immediately. She knows she shouldn't, but she does. "And here we are," he says, still speaking softly so that Mother won't hear. "Dama, Dama, strong back, I presume." "Just Demaya," she says automatically. He inclines his head gracefully and extends a hand to her.
"So noted. Will you join us then, Demaya?"
Demaya doesn't move, and he does not grab her. He just stays where he is, patient as stone, hand offering and not taking. 10 breaths pass, 20. Demaya knows she'll have to go with him, but she likes that he makes it feel like a choice. So at last, she takes his hand and lets him pull her up. He keeps her hand while she dusts off as much of the straw as she can, and then he tugs her closer just a little.
"One moment."
"Huh?" But the child buyer's other hand is already behind her head, pressing 2 fingers into the base of her skull so quickly and deftly that she doesn't startle. He shuts his eyes for a moment, shivers minutely, and then exhales, letting her go.
"Duty first," he says cryptically.
She touches the back of her head, confused, and still feeling the lingering sensation of his fingers' pressure.
"Now let's head downstairs."
"What did you do?"
"Just a little ritual of sorts. Something that will make it easier to find you, should you ever become lost."
She cannot imagine what this means.
"Come now. I need to tell your mother you'll be leaving with me."
So it really is true. Demaya bites her lip, and when the man turns to head back to the ladder, she follows a pace or two behind.
"Well, that's that," says the child buyer as they reach Mother on the ground floor.
Mother sighs at the sight of her, perhaps in exasperation.
"If you could assemble a package for her, 1 or 2 changes of clothing, any travel food you can provide, a coat, we'll be on our way."
Mother draws up in surprise. "We gave away her coat."
"Gave it away? In winter?"
He speaks mildly, but Mother looks abruptly uncomfortable.
"She's got a cousin who needed it. We don't all have wardrobes full of fancy clothes to spare, and—"
Here Mother hesitates, glancing at Demaya. Demaya just looks away. She doesn't want to see if Mother looks sorry for giving away the coat. She especially doesn't want to see if Mother's not sorry.
"And you've heard that Aura jeans don't feel cold the way others do," says the man with a weary sigh. "That's a myth. I assume you've seen your daughter take cold before."
Mother looks flustered. "Yes, but I thought—"
That Demaya might have been faking it. That was what she'd said to Demaya that first day after she got home from creche and while they were setting her up in the barn. Mother had raged, her face streaked with tears, while Father just sat there silent and white-lipped. Demaya had hidden it from them, Mother said. Hidden everything, pretended to be a child when she was really a monster. That was what monsters did. She had always known there was something wrong with Demaya. She'd always been such a little liar. The man shakes his head.
"Nevertheless, she will need some protection against the cold. It will grow warmer as we approach the equatorials, but we'll be weeks on the road getting there."
Mother's jaw flexes.
"So you're really taking her to Eumenes then?"
"Of course, I—"
The man stares at her.
"Ah."
He glances at Demaya. They both look at Demaya, their gazes like an itch. She squirms.
"So even thinking I was coming to kill your daughter, you had the calm headman summon me."
Mother tenses.
"Don't. It wasn't—"
At her sides, her hands flex. Then she bows her head as if she is ashamed, which Demaya knows is a lie. Mother isn't ashamed of anything she's done. If she was, why would she do it?
Ordinary people can't take care of children like her, says Mother very softly.
Her eyes dart to Demaya's once and away, fast.
She almost killed a boy at school. We've got another child and neighbors and...
Abruptly, she squares her shoulders, lifting her chin.
And it's any citizen's duty, isn't it?
True, true, all of it. Your sacrifice will make the world better for all.
The words are a stock phrase. Praise. The tone is uniquely not. Demaya looks at the man again, confused now because child buyers don't kill children. That would defeat the point. And what's this about the Equatorials? Those lands are far, far to the south. The child buyer glances at Demaya and somehow understands that she does not understand. His face softens, which should be impossible with those frightening eyes of his.
To Eumenes, the man says to Mother.
To Demaya.
Yes. She's young enough, so I'm taking her to the fulcrum. There she will be trained to use her curse. Her sacrifice, too, will make the world better.
Demaya stares back at him, realizing just how wrong she's been. Mother has not sold Demaya. She and Father have given Demaya away. And Mother does not hate her. Actually, she fears Demaya. Is there a difference? Maybe. Demaya doesn't know how to feel in response to these revelations. And the man? The man is not a child buyer at all. He's...
You're a guardian?
She asks, even though by now she knows. He smiles again. She did not think guardians were like this. In her head, they are tall, cold-faced, bristling with weapons and secret knowledge. He's tall, at least.
I am.
He says, and takes her hand. He likes to touch people a lot, she thinks.
I'm your guardian.
Mother sighs.
I can give you a blanket for her.
That will do, thank you.
And then the man falls silent, waiting. After a few breaths of this, Mother realizes he's waiting for her to go fetch it. She nods jerkily, then leaves, her back stiff the whole way out of the barn. So then the man and Demaya are alone.
Here,
he says, reaching up to his shoulders. He's wearing something that must be a uniform. Blocky shoulders and long, stiff lines of sleeve and pant leg. Burgundy cloth that looks sturdy but scratchy. Like Ma's quilt. It has a short cape, more decorative than useful. But he pulls it off and wraps it around Demaya. It's long enough to be a dress on her. And warm from his body.
Thank you, she says. Who are you?
My name is Shafa, Guardian Warrant.
She's never heard of a place called Warrant, but it must exist, because what good is a calm name otherwise?
Guardian is a use name?
It is for guardians.
He drawls this, and her cheeks grow warm with embarrassment.
We aren't much use to any calm, after all, in the ordinary course of things.
Demaya frowns in confusion.
What, so they'll kick you out when a season comes? But...
Guardians are many things she knows from the stories. Great warriors and hunters and sometimes, often, assassins. Calms need such people when hard times come. Shafa shrugs, moving away to sit on a bale of old hay. There's another bale behind Demaya, but she keeps standing because she likes being on the same level with him. Even sitting, he's taller, but at least not by so much.
The Orogenes of the Fulcrum serve the world, he says. You will have no use name from here forth, because your usefulness lies in what you are. Not merely some familial aptitude. From birth, An Orogen child can stop a shake, even without training. You are Orogen. Within a comm or without one, you are Orogen. With training, however, and with the guidance of other skilled Orogens at the Fulcrum, you can be useful not merely to a single comm, but all the stillness. He spreads his hands. As a guardian via the Orogens in my care, I've taken on a similar purpose, with a similar breath. Therefore, it's fitting that I share my charge's possible fate. Demaya is so curious, so full of questions, that she doesn't know which to ask first. Do you have... She stumbles over the concept, the words, the acceptance of herself. Others? Like me? I... And she runs out of words. Shafa laughs, as if he senses her eagerness, and it pleases him. I am guardian to 6 right now, he says, inclining his head to let Demaya know that this is the right way to say it, to think it. Including you. And you brought them all to Humanis? You found them like this, like me?
Not exactly. Some were given into my care, born within the Fulcrum, or inherited from other guardians. Some I've found since being assigned to ride circuit in this part of the Nomidlats.
He spreads his hands.
When your parents reported their orogenic child to Palella's headman, he telegraphed word to Brevert, which sent it to Gedo, which sent it to Eumenes, and they in turn telegraphed word to me.
He sighs.
It's only luck that I checked in at the node station near Brevard the day after the message arrived. Otherwise, I wouldn't have seen it for another 2 weeks.
Devaya knows Brevard, though Eumenes is only legend to her, and the rest of the places Shafa has mentioned are just words in a creche textbook. Brevard is the town closest to Palela, and it's much bigger. It's where Father and Chaga go to sell farm shares at the beginning of every growing season. Then she registers his words. 2 more weeks in this barn, freezing and pooping in a corner. She's glad he got the message in Brevard, too.
You're very lucky, he says,
perhaps reading her expression. His own has grown sober.
Not all parents do the right thing. Sometimes they don't keep their child isolated, as the Fulcrum and we guardians recommend. Sometimes they do, but we get the message too late. And by the time a guardian arrives, a mob has carried the child off and beaten her to death. Don't think unkindly of your parents, Dama. You're alive and well, and that is no small thing.
Demaya squirms a little, unwilling to accept this. He sighs.
And sometimes, he continues, the parents of an Orogen will try to hide the child, to keep her untrained and without a guardian. That always goes badly.
This is the thing that's been in her mind for the past 2 weeks, ever since that day at school. If her parents loved her, they would not have locked her in the barn. They would not have called this man. Mother would not have said those terrible things. Why can't they? She blurts before she realizes he has said this on purpose. To see if why can't they just hide me and keep me here is something she's been thinking. And now he knows the truth. Demaya's hands clench on the cape where she's holding it closed around herself, but Shafa merely nods.
First, because they have another child, and anyone caught harboring an unregistered Orogen is ejected from their comm as a minimum punishment.
Demaya knows this, though she resents the knowledge. Parents who cared about her would risk, wouldn't they?
Your parents could not have wanted to lose their home, their livelihood, and custody of both their children. They chose to keep something, rather than lose everything. But the greatest danger lies in what you are, Dama. You can no more hide that than you can the fact that you are female or your clever young mind.
She blushes, unsure if this is praise. He smiles, so she knows it is. He continues,
every time the earth moves, you will hear its call. In every moment of danger, you will reach instinctively for the nearest source of warmth and movement. The ability to do this is to you, as fists are to a strong man. When a threat is imminent, of course you'll do what you must to protect yourself. And when you do, people will die.
Demaya flinches. Shafa smiles again, as kindly as always. And then Demaya thinks about that day. It was after lunch in the play yard. She had eaten her bean roll while sitting by the pond with Limi and Shantari, as she usually did while the other children played or threw food at each other. Some of the other kids were huddled in a corner of the yard, scratching the dirt and muttering to each other. They had a geometry test that afternoon. And then Zab had come over to the three of them, though he'd looked at Demaya in particular as he said, let me cheat off you. Limi giggled. She thought Zab liked Demaya. Demaya didn't like him, though, because he was awful, always picking on Demaya, calling her names, poking her until she yelled at him to stop and got in trouble with their teachers for doing it. So she said to Zab, I'm not getting in trouble for you. He'd said, you won't if you do it right. Just move your paper over. No, she'd said again. I'm not going to do it right. I'm not going to do it at all. Go away. She turned back to Shantari, who'd been talking before Zab interrupted. Next thing Demaya knew, she was on the ground. Zab had shoved her off the rock using both hands. She tumbled head over heels, literally, landing on her back. Later, she'd had 2 weeks in the barn to think about it. She would recall the look of shock on his face, as if he hadn't realized she would go over so easily. But at the time, all she had known was that she was on the ground, the muddy ground. Her whole back was cold and wet and foul. Everything smelled of fermenting bog and crushed grass. It was in her hair. And this was her best uniform, and Mother was going to be furious, and she was furious, and so she'd grabbed the air and... Demaya shivers. People will die. Shafa nods as if he has heard this thought.
Your fire mountain glass, Dama.
He says this very softly.
You're a gift of the earth. But Father Earth hates us, never forget. And his gifts are neither free nor safe. If we pick you up, hone you to sharpness, treat you with the care and respect you deserve, then you become valuable. But if we just leave you lying about, you'll cut to the bone the first person who blunders across you, or worse, you'll shatter and hurt many.
Demaya remembers the look on Zob's face. The air had gone cold for only an instant, billowing around her like a burst balloon. That was enough to make a crust of ice on the grass beneath her and to make the sweat drops go solid on Zob's skin. They'd stopped and jerked and stared at each other. She remembers his face.
You almost killed me, she had seen there.
Shafa, watching her closely, has never stopped smiling.
It isn't your fault, he says. Most of what they say about Orogens isn't true. There's nothing you did to be born like this, nothing your parents did. Don't be angry with them or with yourself.
She begins to cry because he's right. All of it, everything he says, it's right. She hates Mother for putting her in here. She's hated Father and Chaga for letting Mother do it. She hates herself for being born as she is and disappointing them all. And now, Shafa knows just how weak and terrible she is.
Shh, 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 he says,
standing and coming over to her. He kneels and takes her hands. She starts crying harder. But Shafa squeezes her hands, sharply, enough to hurt. And she starts and draws breath, and blinks at him through the blur.
You mustn't, little one. Your mother will return soon. Never cry where they can see you.
What? He looks so sad for Demaya, as he reaches up and cups her cheek.
It isn't safe.
She has no idea what this means. Regardless, she stops. Once she's wiped her cheeks, he thumbs away a tear that she's missed, then nods after a quick inspection.
Your mother will probably be able to tell, but that should do for everyone else.
The barn door creaks and mother is back, this time with father in tow. Father's jaw is tight, and he doesn't look at Demaya, even though he hasn't seen her since mother put her in the barn. Both of them focus on Shafa, who stands and moves a little in front of Demaya, nodding thanks as he accepts the folded blanket and twine-wrapped parcel that mother gives him.
We've watered your horse, father says stiffly. You want provender to carry? No need, says Shafa. If we make good time, we should reach Brevard just after nightfall.
Father frowns.
A hard ride.
Yes,
but in Brevard, no one from this village will get the fine idea to come seek us out along the road and make their farewells to Demaya in a ruder fashion.
It takes a moment for Demaya to understand, and then she realizes. People from Palela want to kill Demaya. But that's wrong, isn't it? They can't really, can they? She thinks of all the people she knows, the teachers from creche, the other children, the old ladies at the roadhouse who used to be friends with Ma before she died.
Father thinks this too. She can see that in his face.
And he frowns and opens his mouth to say what she's thinking. They wouldn't do something like that.
But he stops before the words leave his mouth.
He glances at Demaya once, and with his face full of anguish, before remembering to look away again.
Here you are, Shafa says to Demaya, holding out the blanket.
It's Ma's. She stares at it, then looks at Mother, but Mother won't look back. It isn't safe to cry. Even when she pulls off Shafa's cloak and he wraps the blanket around her instead, familiar, fusty, and scratchy and perfect. She keeps her face completely still. Shafa's eyes flick to hers. He nods just a little in approval. Then he takes her hand and leads her toward the barn door. Mother and father follow, but they don't say anything. Demaya doesn't say anything. She does glance at the house once, catching a glimpse of someone through a gap in the curtains before the curtains flick shut. Chaga, her big brother, who taught her how to read and how to ride a donkey and how to skip rocks on a pond. He doesn't even wave goodbye. But this is not because he hates her. She sees that now. Shafa lifts Demaya onto a horse bigger than any she's ever seen. A big glossy bay with a long neck, and then Shafa's in the saddle behind her, tucking the blanket around her legs and shoes so she won't chafe or get chilblains. And then they are away.
Don't look back, Shafa advises. It's easier that way.
So she doesn't. Later she will realize he was right about this, too. Much later, though, she will wish that she had done it anyway. Obscured. The ice-white eyes, the ash-blow hair, the filtering nose, the sharpened teeth, the salt-split tongue. From Tablet 2, The Incomplete Truth, verse 8.